Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. Great to have you with us on the show today. Hello, Sean.
Afternoon, Mr. Jones.
Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. What would make the holidays really bright? Oh, I don't know, a vehicle? I mean, that would be incredible. Well, Bob Soci today?
Play-by-play voice of the Patriots. I believe that's on tap. Nathan Davis today.
At 4:35.
Yeah.
Nice win for the Bison last night over Mount St. Mary's, 81-65. Went on a 22-5 run. It's kind of tight halfway through the second half, and then they cruised on to the win.
Absolutely.
So Princeton Thursday night. So power in the Ivy League. Come to Central PA. So if you're not doing anything Thursday night, try your best to get to the matchup.
Ah, most everybody has their shopping done.
Right.
I know, I was on the strip, ironically enough, just drove past Sunbury Motors Kia a little while ago, and Monroe Marketplace was hopping.
Oh, I'm sure it was. Yeah. I'm saying, I mean, look, you want to get yourself a, you want to make the holiday really bright, just get a vehicle. Now, that changes the tone of the entire holiday, as far as I'm concerned. All right. A couple quick notes. Christian McCaffrey, I'm not so much Leonard Fournette's been hurt, and he's played hurt.
But that did not stop you from taking LSU as your prediction in the bowl game.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not that smart.
Those two are taking a lot of heat for sitting out.
Well, I'm not giving Fournette as much because he's been playing hurt. All right, and I don't know how hurt he is. I mean, there's a difference between being hurt and being injured. Right now. I don't like where a lot of what we cover is trending, and I really don't like how it's covered. I just don't. And I'm old fashioned, and I know a lot of people look at these issues as personal business decisions. And I understand that because the door is open to make more money in a short period of time than you or I will see in our lifetime combined. They'll make more money in a short period of time than many people in the audience combined. So, I mean, I understand that part. So I'm on board understanding that. But that goes against every fiber within me, and it goes against every fiber within me as to how I was raised. And I'll just give you an example, and everybody's built differently, and look, and everybody knows I've got like the candy store jobs. I believe me, nobody knows that more than I do, and I think about that all the time. But I'll give you an example. Riding back on the bus from Madison Square Garden, because the team didn't fly. It was within 4 hours, so they bussed up and bussed back. So I'm riding back on the bus, and you've got a little bit of idle time on your hands. Now, I am absolutely taking off the 24th, the 25th, and the 26th. Absolutely off all three of those days. The next thing I will do will be the game on the 27th at 3 with Northwestern. And I think Sean knows this as well as anybody. But so you start thinking back, okay, when's the last time I had a day off?
Last day of vacation, first week of August.
Okay. What day was that?
I think that was probably, a Thursday or Friday. You didn't have a full week off. I think you came back to do some. You did a Spikes game back home, I think.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think the way I calculated it is that when I get to Friday this week, I will have worked 135 days in a row. Okay? I mean, I'm talking like that's Saturday, Sundays, the whole thing. I've worked 135 days in a row as of Friday. That's if I'm somehow able to survive tomorrow, Thursday, Friday. If I don't meet my demise before then, that's what it'll be. But that's the way I was brought up. You hear my brother, okay, on every Friday, right? You'll hear him on this Friday as well. I'll bet my brother has also worked 135 days in a row. I'll bet any amount he has. He's constantly going into that shop on Saturday and Sunday because a job has to get done. Now, for me, obviously, I'm doing games. For goodness, my Sunday work day this week was sitting in Madison Square Garden broadcasting a game. Now, every person out there listening to this show right now would have traded seats with me in a heartbeat to sit in Madison Square Garden on a Sunday and broadcast a game. But now I want to bring it back to, Christian McCaffrey and to Leonard Fournette and why this is a foreign concept to me. Leaving your team? Your season's not over yet. What is this going? What are the consequences of this? Is it going to happen now where a team is 5-3, no shot at getting a division title, no shot at a major bowl game, and potential top 10 draft pick looks around and everybody says, hey, it's been a good run, I'm shutting it down. Right? Isn't that possible? Isn't it possible that hotshot prospect finishes second year, looks around and says, I'm not playing my junior year, I'm sitting out, I'm training for the NFL draft? Possible. Now keep in mind, from a management point of view, how many bowl games have we seen in the last 10 years where the head coach was not coaching the bowl game? We just watched the Las Vegas Bowl. Tom Herman coached that team all season. Now I'm going to Texas. Oh, but I love my kids. I'm sure you do. I would hope you love your kids. They got you the Texas job. We're in an era now where, and the Spurs got this going, and of course it's thought to be progressive thinking, where I'm going to rest my players tonight. For example, LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and was it Kevin Love? Just all sat out a game for Cleveland. Because we're at the quarter pole here and they're exhausted. Okay. Blake Shelton, 40 city tour. It's 40 cities. I need to opt out tonight. Okay. Really? I got the Rose Bowl coming up. You know what? Maybe I shouldn't do the next two basketball games. I might get a sore throat. This doesn't jive with me. It does this, and I understand the business part of it. I understand they're not getting money to be at Stanford and LSU, but I feel like they have disrespected their coaches. They've disrespected their teammates. They've disrespected, let's take McCaffrey's case, the city of El Paso and the Sun Bowl. these are all foreign concepts to me. I mean, how many games do you think Bill Russell sat out? Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan. You know, I'm tired. I think I'll sit out tonight. Oh, how about none? They may have sat out because they were hurt. I mean, Bobby Orr didn't even take the money from the Chicago Blackhawks because he got hurt. He said, I didn't earn the money. So he refused to cash the checks. Okay. This doesn't go. And I realize, for example, if you're a great IT college student, you're awesome and incredible, and IBM hires you as a sophomore, all of us would be praising you for going and taking the job. I understand that. In an individual sport, this is to me absolutely acceptable. You know what? I'm a great golfer. I'm going to turn pro. Okay. It's an individual sport. It's a team sport. And McCaffrey's not going to be a first round pick. Now, I'm wondering, the McCaffrey thing's going to be interesting, and not for the reason that you're that you think you're going to hear. This is going to be interesting to see the temperature as to how this plays out and how closely other elite prospects that are currently freshmen and sophomores, how they're going to gauge the temperature of this. And I don't mean public reaction. We're going to find out through sources whether it made a difference to NFL people at all about doing this. Oh, it's great he did it, we have no problem with it, whatever. Or if there's a segment out there that says, you know what, because we gauge character, and which is, remember Kim Jones was on the show last week talking about this, about how character has become a big, big deal in the NFL. Hey, you are walking out on your team.
I'll tell you, the other group of people that were disappointed when they first heard that McCaffrey story, without a doubt, would be CBS, because they've got the Sun Bowl next week with Stanford and North Carolina. I mean, let's face it, they don't air all the bowl games like ESPN does.
They air one. This is it.
Yep.
Now, the ratings for that weren't going to be great to begin with, but having McCaffrey there was a draw, no question. The people of El Paso, I don't know what it would have no effect on ticket sales, I don't think, but still, I know it's a disappointment down there. I've read about the disappointment they have with it. But how is this going to resonate with NFL teams who are judging character? And I'll give you a good example. Because, again, the way I'm made up, if I have given a choice on my draft board between Danell Pumphrey and Christian McCaffrey, and the reason I say that is that their skill sets outside of punt returns are very similar. Pumphrey is an excellent receiver out of the backfield, excellent running back. It's a good blocker, too. All right? So I'm talking about two guys with relative skill sets. I'm going to take Danell Pumphrey, because I think Pumphrey, and I said this the other day on the show, if you recall, Sean, I said, to me, Pumphrey is Darren Sproles. I think he's got a 10-year NFL career where he's not going to be a first-round pick or anything like that, but he's going to latch on with the team, and guess what? He's going to be out there. He's going to be coming out of the backfield, catching passes, getting an occasional carry here and there, and the guy's going to carve out maybe with two or three teams in his career, but like a 10-year NFL career if he stays injury-free. He's Darren Sproles. And Sproles is a great asset that a lot of people would love to have.
Probably safe to say, too, the best running back that team has had at San Diego State, running back-wise, in a couple of decades since Marshall Faulk.
Since Marshall Faulk. But, I mean, but still, I'm talking about relative terms as to what he is in today's modern NFL game. He's Sproles. I think McCaffrey is Sproles in today's modern game. So given the choice, I pick Pumphrey. Why? Pumphrey stuck it out. He quit. It would play if I have two players of similar skill set I'm going to take the guy that stayed over the one that did the business decision. Because to me, he's going to make another business decision down the road that may not benefit me. Right? And I'm not being vindictive here. I'm saying, look, your track record shows that when push comes to shove, you're number one and not the organization and not the team. Now, I'd have to interview him and go through the interview thing and so forth. I'm saying on the surface, outside looking in. Well, we'll take a break. You may have a different opinion. If you do, fine, so be it. And I welcome and will listen to it without question. 1-800-795-9565 here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Santa, all of these wish lists say they want a new Kia.
No worries, Jingle. It's the Holidays on Us sales event at Sunbury Motors Kia.
Wanna see ya in a Kia.
Sunbury Motors Kia can fill everyone's wish list with a new Kia. It's Kia's Holidays on Us sales event. Just listen to this gift from Sunbury Motors Kia. No payments until May.
You heard right, May.
Plus 0% financing for up to 66 months on all 2017 Fortes and Serenos. And all remaining 2016 Optima and Optima Hybrids. Plus 2016 Optimas and Optima Hybrids also have $500 bonus cash. Remember, all new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. So go ahead, overspend on presents for the family, because you'll still be able to get a brand new Kia from Sunbury Motors Kia.
The holidays are on us
at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
Warranty is limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
Welcome back. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. S. Claus on the show from 6 to 7 tonight. Big fan. Love S. Claus. Do you know how many requests do you think Santa's had on in the Magic Radio here in the past month? Do you know, Sean? Just a guess.
I'll tell you what, right after Halloween, the phone, the business line starts ringing off the hook. People, you know, reserving their spots for their kids, grandkids, nieces, nephews to be on the show. Fills up quick.
Really?
Without even having to start hyping it on the air. True story.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Yep.
Just hard to believe he's able to carve out an hour for us every day.
Excuse me, Santa understands where the people are.
And he knows where the people are.
Yes, he does. You know, I've been trying to bust my tail to get off the naughty list. I can't seem to do it.
Well, as soon as the show is done, I'll sneak over to the Magic Radio room before the kids show up. I'll dust it off, turn it on, and put a good word in for you.
Well, you're the only hope I have.
No pressure. No big deal.
Hey, really? Go get him, partner. Oh, man. Tomorrow we're going to have a writer from the LA Times on the show about USC, and Todd Blackledge will rerun that as well.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. He has been on this show before in the role as the play-by-play voice of the Midshipman of Navy. He has then returned to this show as the play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots, and now we have him back again. He is the outstanding, and I do mean outstanding, play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots, Bob Soci. Bob, welcome back. It's great to hear you.
It's great to hear you too, Steve, and thank you very much for the kind words. I really appreciate them. I think that, you know, you're probably overstating my my abilities, because but coming from you as one of the best in the business, too, I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much. For you, let's talk about this season. This is an odd dynamic season for the Patriots because of the Brady suspension. Were you surprised in any way And was Scott Zolak surprised in any way that Brady showed so little rust once he got going again?
I think you would have to be surprised with just about anybody else. You know, maybe now looking back on it, you know, I might say that I wasn't, but even considering Tom Brady, there was some surprise that things went seemingly as seamless as they did. He felt that there was some rust. He said there were plays that were left on the field those first couple of weeks back. But, you know, just to watch him perform the way he did in week four, then in week five, the way he has continued to play all season long with just the two interceptions, and he never ceases to amaze. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, has had this tremendous body of work in his career, Steve, and at the age of 39, still seemingly is getting better. When people ask what stands out about Tom Brady, and the thing that I'll say in my brief time covering him now, 4 years, is that at an age when a lot of guys are simply trying to hang on and, you know, maintain what they have and then overcome what they've lost, here's a guy who's expanding his repertoire. He's become more mobile the last couple of years. This season he's been a better deep ball thrower than he's been the last few years. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised in retrospect, but absolutely, you know, there was some surprise after 4 weeks away from the team. Not just that he wasn't playing games, but he wasn't practicing with teammates. And to be able to pick up the way he did going back to the last days of training camp, pretty remarkable to say the least.
He, except for Randy Moss, he never has had a, quote, superstar receiver in the group. Now, I'm a big Julian Edelman guy. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But how amazing is it the way the Patriots fit parts and fit roles and make it work?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting in that regard, too, because I've heard some people say that, you know, Brady's a great quarterback, but a lot of it has to do with the system. And you know, perhaps he is the right fit for the system, but in my view, the system has evolved the way it has, and it's enabled the Patriots to bring in, you know, however many wide receivers they've had through the course of Tom Brady's, you know, 17 years on this team, and still they work like a machine, and I think that's a credit to him. And you know, you look at, like you say, the cast of receivers he's had and the different teammates on his championship teams. Now, granted, early on, they lean heavily on their defense, and you know, Tom is a second-year quarterback, first-year starter, was a much different kind of quarterback than he is today. But to have won the four titles with, I think, different generations of teams and certainly with a lot of different guys coming and going offensively at those skill positions, that, again, is a testament to just how special he is.
All right. The next part I want to get to is on defense. You know, Emmanuel Sanders was almost comical the other day talking about Butler. I mean, Butler shut him down. You called that great play in the Super Bowl where he stopped the Seahawks on the goal line with a great play. What kind of corner has he become, and what can Patricia do because of the fact that he has great corner play?
Well, he's become a very good cornerback. I think he certainly has put himself now among the best cornerbacks in the league. You know, in terms of the numbers, he's there with passes defended. Hasn't had the interceptions that some other guys have had. But I think when you look at, you know, the job that Malcolm's done on a consistent basis, you know, with exception maybe of the matchup last year against Antonio Brown, you know, Patriots generally have been able to put him on a guy and say, you know, shut him down, and he's done that. And even in that game, the season opener, 2015 against Brown, he was a productive receiver, and you look back at his stat line, you know, the numbers were very good for him. But it was an effort, a real effort for him to get to those numbers because of the competitiveness of Malcolm. You know, the thing that stands out is the tenacity. He's a guy who never gives up on a play, and I know that's cliched, but think back to last year's game for the Patriots and the Giants, and there was initially ruled a touchdown for Odell Beckham Jr., but because Butler didn't concede the play and knocked the ball out of Beckham's hands, when they went back and looked at it on replay, you know, contrary to what maybe other people thought, nonetheless, the official said, that's not a catch. By the definition of the rule book, it's not a catch. It turned out to be a huge play that ultimately led to a game-winning field goal for Steven Gostkowski because the Giants had to settle for a field goal themselves rather than getting that touchdown. And you know, Butler's come up with a lot of different plays like that during his 2 years now as a starter for this team. He's been durable. He certainly came into this league as an unknown, as an undrafted free agent out of West Alabama. You know, he's a humble kid. As I said, you know, has this great competitive zeal, and I think the thing that he's allowed Matt Patricia to do is similar to what Darrelle Revis had done here, is kind of scheme with the other guys. If you can put Butler on somebody and say, you'll take him out of the equation, then we can work with the rest of the defense, the secondary, to try to at least neutralize some other people. And Patriots have had a revolving door at that third cornerback spot this year. Logan Lyon has, I think, improved his play of late, and he's been a solid guy for them at the second cornerback spot. But that third cornerback has been an issue. Eric Rowe, the former Eagle, has helped to fill in nicely of late for them in that spot. But they certainly know they've got a true number one in Malcolm Butler.
The Patriots are on track to be the number one seed in the AFC. Bob, if they do get that, what does it mean to them playing at Gillette?
Well, it means, I don't want to say everything, but it means almost everything, Steve, because I think this team is capable of going on the road and winning, but they're almost unbeatable here at home. And I was chatting with my counterpart, Dave Logan, the other day, as the great voice of the Broncos, and he said, you know, the thing about the Patriots at home, they don't have to play well necessarily to win at home. And we've even seen that in the postseason the last couple of years when they beat the Ravens in the 2014 divisional playoffs after falling behind twice by two touchdown margins. Or, for example, even last year in the divisional round, it wasn't a flawless performance against Kansas City, but they pulled it out. This team is nearly unbeatable in Foxborough, especially when you look at the postseason record. You know, save for what the Ravens have done a couple of times and what Rex Ryan's Jets did, that's been the Patriots' track record. Last year was a critical turning point when they lost the number one seed down the stretch to the Denver Broncos and had to go to Denver. Certainly the crowd had a big influence on that game. Patriots were a bit overwhelmed with the Denver pass rush. Broncos did a great job of anticipating the snap count. And the Patriots had a tough time adjusting. A lot of things have changed, but certainly for the Pats, they'd like to eliminate any possibility of a similar scenario this year by being here at home in Foxborough.
No team is going to be obviously perfect. I mean, some are just better than others. So what would your concern be? And maybe, you know, we can echo maybe what Scott says as well. What would your concern be about the Patriots that would be something that would be a potential weakness that could be exploited?
Yeah, Steve, I think it goes back to the point about the secondary and that third cornerback spot. Because, as you know, I mean, the NFL these days is a game of 5-6 defensive backs.
It's all sub-packages today, yeah.
The sub-defense is the base defense nowadays. And when you look at a team, for example, like the one in your neck of the woods, that didn't have Ben Roethlisberger at home when the Patriots beat the Steelers earlier this year, but would have him in a playoff matchup, with the weapons that Pittsburgh has, you know, with Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown and some of those other receivers they have, where maybe they can exploit now that second or third matchup, that I think could be a problem for the Pats. I think the defense has improved considerably over the course of the last month. You know, it's been an interesting year for the Patriots on that side of the ball because they've gone through some changes. They let Chandler Jones go in the offseason, one of their high-profile pass rushers. They let Jamie Collins go during the season to Cleveland, certainly a dynamic athlete and a guy who's looked upon around the league as a freak in a lot of ways and a playmaker. But they've made adjustments in the absence of those two guys, and they've, I think, over the course of time, a little experimentation and bringing some new people in, identified roles, and they've become a solid defense. But still, I think there is a vulnerability, despite how well they played the last month. If you've got to line up, and now you got to worry about not just the number one and two receivers, but the third guy, and even in the case of the Steelers now, Ladarius Green wasn't available when they met in the regular season, plus Bell coming out of the backfield, and D'Angelo Williams didn't play in the regular season against them. So Pittsburgh could be a team, for example, that could test the Patriots and really strain that secondary.
Last year, if there was an issue Tom Brady had last year, it was the youth of the offensive line. He was under constant pressure last year. I believe I heard in a broadcast you said last year that the percentage of times was up in the 30s, the number of times that he was pressured last year. How much has that dynamic up front changed, and what has that meant to Brady?
It's changed dramatically, and it's meant a lot. And it was reflected in the game on Sunday against the Broncos. Dante Scarnecchia was in retirement for a couple of years. He was still consulting and doing a lot of scouting work for the Patriots, but a longtime assistant coach in this league and one of the more highly respected coaches in the NFL for three-plus decades, had been away from the team full-time. And Dave DeGuglielmo came in, and he did a good job overall, I think. You look back at 2014, there were a lot of issues early in that year, and they solidified enough to win a Super Bowl championship. But last year, as you mentioned, there was youth, plus there was inconsistency in the day-to-day lineup because of a lot of injuries. Nate Solder, the left tackle, was lost early in the year, and that meant playing a guy like Marcus Cannon out of position as a better fit at right tackle. Brian Stork was then a second-year center coming off injury, and he was a guy that would have some issues, that would affect his play during the course of 2015, as it turned out, really lead to his release by the Patriots before this season began. So they were going through a constant state of transition last year. I think one of the things they did by bringing Skarnecchia back is they not only got a great technician and a guy with a tremendous amount of expertise, but someone who relates extremely well to players, and also someone who has the stature in this league to say, look, this is the way we're going to do it. This is the way I'm going to do it, the way I want to do it. And that's built continuity. And he said right from the start, I want to have the same five guys on that offensive line, and I want to shuffle people in and out, which was a byproduct, I think, of the situation, the circumstances last year. So they've had five guys for the most part, from day one this year who've been together. Solder is back. He's played well. Cannon is a good fit at right tackle. He came into this season in better shape. Skarnecki relates to both of those guys extremely well. They drafted Joe Tooney, a guard out of North Carolina State, and he's played just about every snap at left guard. Shaq Mason is a right guard who came out of an option program at Georgia Tech and has played well now in year two. And then David Andrews was a rookie free agent center last year, and he's been the starter for virtually every snap this season. And, what they've done is they've given Brady time to throw, but I think more so, too, they've given the Patriots a running game, which is something they didn't have last year. And here's LeGarrette Blount with 1,000 yards to his name and 15 rushing touchdowns, the franchise single season record to his name. So they've become more balanced, and they've given their quarterback more time to throw when he does drop back.
There are two organizations I think of that seem to understand personnel and understand the shelf life of their current personnel better than anyone. That'd be the St. Louis Cardinals to me in baseball. I never see them get burned on a trade. And the New England Patriots. What is it about the eye Belichick has in conjunction with how Robert Kraft runs the organization? But the Patriots just seem to have a really good handle on shelf life and also how parts fit.
We absolutely. And I think, to Robert Kraft's credit, he's someone who learned from the early years of his ownership tenure. He had Bill Parcells here, and the famous line about Parcells' departure, when they ask you to cook the dinner, they ought to let you shop for some of the groceries. And then Pete Carroll came in, and there were some issues between Bobby Greer and the personnel department for the Patriots and the head coach, and that didn't go too well. And when Bill Belichick came back to New England, where he'd been an assistant coach, and Robert Kraft had developed a fondness for him, and Kraft gave him the reins. And Belichick has had full say on personnel, obviously, as a head coach, and he's had a track record where rarely the Patriots have been burned by decisions. They have traded guys like Richard Seymour, like Lawyer Malloy, like Logan Mankins, that are Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber players, guys who've been captains and well-respected leaders in the locker room and caused a lot of controversy in New England, and certainly affected the team in the short term, and yet in the long run, those moves, for the most part, have panned out well. You just look at the decision that he made a couple of years ago when the Patriots had a $25 million option on Darrelle Revis, and they declined to exercise it, and he went to New York, and there was an outcry here. How could you let him go? He came here, and he won a world championship, and he's gone to a division rival again. He's back with the Jets. The Patriots secondary is weakened considerably, and as it turned out, a year and a half, now almost two full seasons into it, it was certainly the right decision. I just think that in Bill's case, he's someone who gets a lot of credit for being a football genius, and that certainly, I think in most cases, hyperbole. In his case, considering his track record, it's apropos. But I think a lot of times what gets overlooked is just the attention to detail and the understanding of what it truly takes to be a great team. And we're talking about the Patriots defense right now, devoid of some stars, but it's becoming a good team, a good unit with a lot of teamwork. And Bill took all those lessons that he's gained through the years at the Naval Academy and his various stops in the NFL to understand it's about building a team, not collecting talent. And again, I know that's cliche, but to me that's one of the biggest things that stands out about him is that people check their egos at the door here. Tom Brady is recognized and revered by teammates past and present as a guy who doesn't put individual goals above those of the team. And that's the culture that Belichick and Kraft have really created here. And I think part of that is just Bill's knowledge of history, his own history, again, being around those Naval Academy teams and wherever he's gone in the NFL, and truly understanding, you know, what separates teams that have lasting success versus teams that are really talented and might have success here and there but don't sustain it.
One final question, Bob, and I'll let you go, and I appreciate the time very, very much. What has this been like for you to know that you have this kind of seat and chronicle this kind of excellence?
It's something you take for granted, for sure. You know, I don't know, you know, if I really appreciated it when I came in, as much as I dreamed of an opportunity like this, Steve, I don't know that I fully appreciate it today. I certainly try to remind myself of that. You know, I think about some of our colleagues who've caught a lot more games than I have and a lot fewer victories than I have. I've been very fortunate, you know, on a week-in, week-out basis to see, you know, the greatest quarterback of all time, in my opinion, coached by the best head coach in the history of the National Football League. And, you know, maybe it's akin to what it was like, you know, for all those years at Happy Valley and what it's become again. You know, when you sit there in the midst of this tremendous atmosphere with, you know, a team that's so successful that turns out good citizens, you know, that get their degrees and are great players and go on to be Hall of Famers in the pro ranks. You know, from my standpoint, like I said, I try not to take it for granted, but it's easy to do sometimes. And the fan base is so passionate. That's another part of the job that really, you know, makes it gratifying and rewarding. But it also, you know, allows you to keep yourself accountable and keeps you on your toes. As you mentioned at the top, I mean, I get long-winded when I talk about the Pats, even more so when I talk about Navy. I had 16 wonderful years calling Navy football in a very rewarding experience. And if I were to leave that job for any other, it would have been an opportunity like this. So it's all worked out, you know, fabulously for me and my family. I couldn't ask for a better opportunity or better situation than the one I'm in.
Well, courtesy of Sirius, I hear you often. You're as precise and as exciting as anybody out there. Congratulations on a great run. Best of luck to you, Scott, all the Patriots organization down the road. And thanks so much. Happy holidays, Bob.
Hey, you know, I really appreciate it. And, you know, I want to say that a couple of weeks ago, Todd Rucci was in the booth with Zoe as Patriots reunited the 2001 team. And nobody was pleased in the booth, Zoe being from Western Pennsylvania as well, having been recruited by the Nittany Lions as a potential linebacker. Nobody was pleased that day when the playoff pairings were announced. So the opinion there was universal. So I want you guys to know that back there, for what it's worth.
Appreciate it very much, but the Rose Bowl isn't bad.
No, not bad at all. Hey, have a great call, Steve. Wonderful holidays.
You too, Bob. Thanks so much for your time. Happy holidays to you and that great family of yours.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Bob Soci, the play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots. And we will come back with more in a moment. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Today, the Patriots, as Brady takes the knee out of victory formation, will depart a mostly empty Sports Authority Field at Mile High once again as the AFC champions. For the fourth time in the last 16 seasons, including a record 8 in a row, the Patriots sit atop the AFC East. And for a record 7th straight January, they'll enjoy the first weekend off in the postseason with an opening round bye in the playoffs. The Patriots win it today 16-3.
All right, 2 hours away from Santa Claus joining the show. Not my show. Santa has his own show. I'd only be a guest. I remember years ago, I'm going back 30 years now, we would have a segment with Santa Claus on the station I was working on at the time. And they put me on because 30 years ago, I had little kids. So I was the one guy that knew what little kids liked. And I remember this is the era where the toy My Little Pony was big. And this youngster calls in and says to Santa Claus, I like, you know, and a little kid voice, I want My Little Pony. And he says, you want a pony? My goodness, that's incredible. You want a pony? And I said, oh, Santa, always the kidder, always thinking big. Of course she wants My Little Pony. He goes, of course she does. Sometimes you got to bail the jolly old elf out. You didn't handle Transformers well either.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.